to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Friday, August 2nd, 2024. Aid agencies declare famine in Sudan's Darfur region.
Famine has been confirmed in North Darfur. That does not necessarily mean there's a formal famine declaration. However, the Famine Review Committee has found that famine conditions are present in North Darfur.
Stigma and discrimination block efforts to stop the spread of HIV/AIDS in eastern Equatorial State.
I may have a friend that I tell my status, and later she or he will also go and tell other people. Then people will start saying, we don't want that person to sit with us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Experts have confirmed famine is ongoing in Sudan's Darfur region. Barrett Alexander Masikos, Sudan's Director of Programs, tells Carol Van Damme that this week's report by the Famine Early Warning System Network highlights the dire situation of tens of thousands of Sudanese trapped in conflict between two competing military factions in the country.
Famine has been confirmed in North Darfur. That does not necessarily mean there's a formal famine declaration. However, the Famine Review Committee has found that famine conditions are present in North Darfur. I think because of the recent, not only recent, but historically present politics around declaring famine, we don't necessarily expect that a formal declaration will follow this review unless there's tremendous international pressure. The FRC report also confirms that famine is likely happening in other parts of Sudan, namely the rest of the Darfur states, central southwest Darfur and north south Kordofan, Al Jazeera state, and parts of Khartoum.
Now, everybody knows about the conflict, and it's been going on for over a year, but why is it hitting Darfur, the famine, I mean, the famine alert in this area and other areas near there so much?
Yeah, the FRC confirmation essentially tells us that the longstanding roadblocks to getting aid into parts of Darfur, particularly North Darfur, with the obstruction of aid getting across the Chad-Sudan border, delays in travel permissions by authorities in Darfur, ongoing conflict, you name it. Now the rainy season is happening in Darfur, so there's continued to be limited access. Those are the reasons that put us in this dire situation.
And when you get into Al-Fashir and those areas, who is blocking the entry points for these aid workers to get in?
It's not only in Darfur. This is a Sudan-wide problem that we're seeing across both parties to conflict, where access across front lines, across borders is being withheld. Even access, particularly in the recent fighting around Sennar State, that displaced 150,000 households to east towards Gedaref and Kassala. Access to those areas in Sennar and Jazeera State, across line into South Kordofan and North Kordofan, have been impeded over the last year as well. There are mutual obstructions from both parties to conflict.
Are your aid workers at risk, the ones that are working in those kinds of areas?
Well, Mercy Corps is not operational in North Darfur around Al-Fashir. We have heard other NGO reports, local partners on the ground, MSF, other partners of ours that are having difficulties with staff safety. Regardless of where in the country, staff safety and humanitarian worker safety is an issue. We're seeing that across the board as attacks on aid workers is a persistent problem. We saw that with the recent pullout of MSF from the hospital in Khartoum, and we continue to see that across the various conflict zones in Sudan.
A report mentions the Zamzam camp specifically for internally displaced persons. Can you talk about that a little?
Our report focuses mainly on central and south Darfur, so not in the Zamzam camp area. However, the Famine Review Committee were the ones that provided the assessment on Zamzam camp conditions and found that famine conditions are likely for about 500,000 people In the report that we released a couple of weeks ago, we found that in central Darfur, over 4,100 children were screened, and about a quarter of them were found to have severe acute malnutrition, which is the most severe and life-threatening type of hunger. And another 2,800 children, or two-thirds of those screened, were found to have moderate acute malnutrition.
That's Barrett Alexander, Masiko's Director of Programs for Sudan. He was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam. The French medical charity Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, is urging Sudan's warring parties to respect healthcare facilities, allow urgent delivery of food and medicine to civilians trapped inside Sudan. My colleague Douglas Mpugwa reached MSF's Sudan program manager, Stephanie Doyon, to discuss the situation in Darfur.
Yes, so Dam is a camp just south of El Fasher, and we have assessed a very critical nutritional situation back in January and March. And basically, we are responding there with medical and nutritional program. And same goes in El Fasher town, where we are supporting a Saudi hospital. Since May, when the combat started, the war started in El Fasher and Zamzam, situation is quite critical. In El Fasher, we have been bombed 10 times and changed medical structures. And now we are only supporting the Saudi hospital, which is the only public hospital remaining in El Fasher, a town for 500,000 people, and which has been hit this weekend. In the camps, situation is quite critical. There is high level of malnutrition. And right now, we are in a difficult situation because we have difficulty in supplying our programs with life-saving nutritional and medical items. We sent two trucks for that 6 weeks ago, and since 4 weeks, they are blocked by RSF in Cap Kabir. And we need these two trucks to make refurbishment, otherwise we'll start to cut some items of the programs. We might, you know, stop treating moderate malnutrition. We had to change some antibiotic like amoxicillin for others because we are running short of amoxicillin. And we need these two trucks and further trucks in order to ensure that we have continued supplies to maintain our project.
The two warring parties seem nowhere near reaching some compromise. How do you work in that kind of situation?
So it's quite difficult because in El Fasher, the situation is very dangerous when there is a war because medical structure has been bombed multiple times. In Zamzam, the situation that is very difficult is for the supply. I mean, right now, we could have agreement with the government to use the Tine border from Chad, but they refuse that we use a route that might be more practical through Adre, and that's a problem. And once we enter, there is some RSF area to be crossed, whether from Tine or from Adre. And we have problem in passing with the truck as we are experiencing presently with the two trucks that are currently blocked in Cap Kabir.
Do you have any protection from either party?
So we are respected by other parties, but our experience is that they don't spare medical structure. When there is fighting, we cannot say that there is an intention to target medical structure, but there is no intention to spare them during the practice of war. So when you are caught into both fire, situation is quite dangerous. So because of this, we had to reduce our activity in El Fasher, and for the same reason, we had to temporarily suspend the presence of our team in Khartoum for the Turkish hospital.
That's MSF Sudan Program Manager Stephanie Doyon. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga earlier today. From Sudan, we move to South Sudan, where people living with HIV/AIDS in eastern Equatorial State capital Torit say stigma and poverty has contributed to the spread of the virus in the state. Health officials say many people who are infected with HIV/AIDS hide to avoid discrimination. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit, eastern Equatorial State.
In 2020, Western Equatorial State had the highest new HIV infection rate, followed by Eastern Equatorial State. Flora Alfred, the HIV state coordinator, says the major challenges include stigma and fear, which prevent patients from picking their prescription drugs, ARVs, which can give HIV patients normal lives. Flora says some counties such as Kapweta and Magwe registered high rate of HIV infection in 2023, but she says the situation is changing gradually.
HIV in Eastern Equatoria is 1.9. Before it was 3.6. The Eastern Equatoria became the second to the Western Equatoria, but now the rate is dropping down because we have people who are working there. They are really well equipped, and also the clients who are taking drugs, they adhere also to the treatments, and their viral load is now suppressed. That is why you can see now the HIV is coming down. And in the community index test, it really reduced the rate of the HIV. And we have partners who are working here, they really also helping the government.
Innocent Rosetta lives with HIV/AIDS. She says many people who are HIV positive face discrimination and some hide their status.
I may have a friend that I tell my status, and later she or he will also go and tell other people. Then people will start saying, we don't want that person to sit with us. She is sick and she will infect us. They start to finger point you. After hearing that, you start to fear to attend meeting in the community because you fear to be finger pointed. And this stigma brings a lot of pain to a person infected. This sickness does not kill if you follow the doctor's prescription. But the problem is the stigma in the community sometimes can make you refuse to take drugs and just want to die or hang.
Achola Evelyn is a former volunteer and HIV/AIDS counselor at the State HIV/AIDS Commission in Torit. She says she had been living with the virus and urges residents of Torit to check their status.
Hospital is the best. Any sickness you feel, go and know your status first. Or you have malaria, typhoid, tuberculosis, what. Go in the hospital. We leave the issue of juju. Which doctor? Like right now, the crisis, the one is there. As right now, you got a ladies. They are running away from home. From 15 years, 13, 14, 16, they go out from home because anger, because what? Now they are on the street. In the evening, you get a man which is able to go with the girl. Maybe the man is positive.
Rose Robin is another living with HIV/AIDS. She says residents of some Eastern Equatoria community know little about HIV/AIDS.
In Himodonge, we went there for awareness. When the community saw us, they asked who we were, and we told them we are people who come to tell you about HIV/AIDS. They start chasing us until the chief came and stopped them, and we continue with our work. Later they come to listen and some test after the awareness. Also to the next village was the same thing. That's the challenge we face. Others says that people with HIV are thin and unhealthy, but this one are healthy. How? In the community, there are a lot of challenges. If they know you are sick, they separate you from people and even give your food separate.
HIV/AIDS remain a major public health issue in South Sudan with varying infection rates across the country. According to the United Nations Population Fund, the HIV prevalence rate among people aged 15 to 49 is estimated at 2.4%. That would equal about 194,000 people living with HIV across the country. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Torit, Eastern Equatorial State.
You
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, El Nino drought in Malawi, Zambia, and Zimbabwe affect millions. Find out how after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Senior UN officials are visiting Southern Africa to assess the humanitarian crisis El Nino drought has caused in Malawi, Zambia, and Zimbabwe, where millions are food insecure. Columbus Mavunga joins them in Zimbabwe as they visit some of the most affected places near Botswana, where some people say they are going for days with nothing to eat after their crops were burnt and their sources of water have dried up.
Winding up her two-day visit to Zimbabwe on Thursday in the country's El Nino-affected Matopo district, UN Assistant Secretary General Rina Gelan appealed immediately to the international community for $430 million to ease the food insecurity in the Southern African nation. Gelani, who is also the UN Climate Crisis Coordinator for the El Nino response, told VOA that most of the countries feeling the effects of the climate change did not cause it.
Africa has only produced less than 4% of greenhouse gas emissions, and yet you can see here in Zimbabwe and then in these Southern African countries, massive impact. We need to urgently be investing in communities and supporting governments on not only mitigating the climate crisis, reducing emissions, but also, because it's here today, helping communities to adapt to the changes that we're seeing.
The naturally occurring El Nino climate pattern has affected Southern African countries for decades, but the droughts have been coming more often and with greater intensity in recent years as global temperatures rise. One of those affected is Bekezela Dube, a mother of four, now depending on odd jobs to survive because all her crops were burned by the sun. She says this year's rain season was very bad because they did not receive sufficient rainfall and did not harvest anything from their field. Even watermelons failed to grow, says Dube. The World Food Programme says five Southern African countries, Lesotho, Malawi, Namibia, Zambia and Zimbabwe have declared the drought a national disaster. Angola and Mozambique are also feeling the impact. World Food Programme Assistant Executive Director Valerie Garnieri accompanied Gelani to Southern Africa.
People are talking about a drought that's more severe than they've seen in 40 years in the country. But we're seeing similar things play out across an additional six countries in Southern Africa, where 27 million people are facing hunger this year because of the El Nino situation.
Zimbabwe's next harvest is not expected until March. Obey Chaputsira, a Matopo district coordinator, says Zimbabwe's government is trying to limit the effects of the drought in his district, where 45,000 people are getting free grain and throughout the country.
We have also embarked on the program of drilling bores, because most of our bores, they are seasonal in the district, so most of them are starting to dry up. We have a comparative advantage that we have a lot of sand in our rivers, so we are extracting water from that sand and coming up with piped water schemes.
The government hopes these efforts produce enough water for vegetable gardens to ensure communities have a balanced diet as they wait for the next rains expected in late October. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Matobo, Zimbabwe.
From Zimbabwe, we go to China, where Chinese are expanding its imports of semi-processed agriculture from Africa in an effort to address trade imbalance and also as a way of diversifying global food chains amid geopolitical tensions. Kate Bartlett visits South Africa's rural Limpopo province, where avocado farmers are getting ready to export their products to the Chinese markets for the first time.
This fruit is so valuable, it's been dubbed green gold, and it's destined for China.
At the end of the BRICS summit last year, the deal was signed to export avocados to China, so we now have access to China, but there's been a big process in between to meet all the requirements of the protocol that was agreed to, and we're very close now to being able to send the first shipment to China.
Derek Duncan is the CEO of a South African Fruit Growers Association and has been working with Chinese inspectors to open so-called green lanes to get avocado exports off the ground. China has long been the African continent's biggest trade partner, but the Asian giant exports some $60 billion more in goods to Africa each year than it imports. In South Africa's case, China exported $11 billion more than it imported in 2022, the most recent year for which figures are available.
Because there's been a strong impetus from the Chinese as well to make sure that this deal happens, because they're aware of that trade imbalance and that they need to be taking more exports from South Africa.
South Africa also exports its agricultural produce to the EU and US, which are its third and fourth largest markets respectively, behind the African continent and China. Many of South Africa's agricultural products benefit from tariff-free access to the US market under Washington's African Growth and Opportunity Act. The avocado deal with Beijing was made last year when South Africa hosted Chinese President Xi Jinping on a state visit alongside the summit of the BRICS Group of Emerging Economies. At the time, South Africa urged China to address the trade deficit. Experts say China is also expanding its imports of semi-processed agriculture from Africa to ensure food security and avoid price inflation. Lauren Johnston is an associate professor of China Studies at the University of Sydney.
Another kind of bigger geostrategic reason for the push on food exports is similar to kind of diversify the global agricultural supply chain. You know, you've had this pressure on China, you've got the soybean pressure from the US, you've got different pressures and trade tensions between Australia and China.
As part of its agricultural push in Africa, China also imports soybeans, citrus, wine, and rooibos tea from South Africa, avocados and tea from Kenya, and coffee from Rwanda and Ethiopia. China's new ambassador to South Africa, Wu Peng, has promised measures are being taken to speed up the export of more agricultural products to China. The potential of this is huge, says Clive Garrett, marketing manager for ZZ2, a South African farming conglomerate which will soon be exporting its avocados to China.
Until October in 2023, South Africa really could only export to Europe, a little bit to the Middle East. But now, since then, we've had Japan, China and India open to us. And these are very exciting markets because the per capita consumption in these markets is still incredibly low. So we see huge opportunities of going into these markets.
According to industry estimates, there are some 300 million people in China earning enough to buy imported fruit. That can only be good news for farmers and workers here in this bucolic mountain town. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Zanine, Limpopo, South Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's time for us to hear from you, our listeners. But before we go to that, I would like you to send us your prediction of the match tomorrow between South Sudan's men's basketball team and Serbia. Most people say it's a game of do or die. Kindly send us your predictions, and we will air them on Monday. Our listener, Mal Adao Mal in Washington, Seattle, writes, "Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. Our police in Juba is fond of intimidating the public, not knowing that they are the most vulnerable group when it comes to soaring economic turmoil in the country. Just look at the scenario where a police officer collapsed due to lack of food. It looks weird. Otherwise, big up to our basketball team in Paris, and thank you." Peter Goch Anyang Majongdul in Newfangak Jungle Estate writes, "I'm happy with South Sudan basketball team in the ongoing Olympics in Paris. The boys are trying, and I'm optimistic that they will make us proud at the end. Go Bright Star. Go Lualdeng. Go Kwanyingor. The Bright Star must shine." James Roy Majok from Unity State in Bantu Town writes, "Hi, John Tanza. Congratulations to South Sudan basketball team for good progress. Soon, South Sudan will be on top by all means." Sabri Isa Khamis in Western Equatorial State, Iambio, writes, "Hello, John Tanza and the team. I'm proud of my country. Basketball team of Bright Star for their amazing performance at the Olympics Games in Paris. This country has got talented people, and I urge the leadership of the country to invest their time and resources on talented people and also on coaches to really select lineup of their players according to fitness of their players ahead of tomorrow's game." Grace from Yei writes, "Hello, VOA. I'm not really happy with the number of people being killed every day in South Sudan. Let our leaders wake up and do their work. They should not be called leaders, yet they are not working. They should put on our shoes so that they will feel what we are going through. Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the management of Voice of America, nor South Sudan in Focus." Send us your comments. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202-630-8011, and we shall sample some of them every Friday. That's all we had for you on our menu for this Friday, August 2nd, 2024. We now leave you with Colonel Mido and the song Long Onyo.
Solo long on your head. Mafizono personaleta. Misalata solo kebir. Mafizono personaleta. Duniade. Kanita solo long on your head. Salata solo kebir, ma fi solo verso maleta. E colonel Mido, nalaga king boss. E barata dunia de turma bintita. Kanita solo longonyo, kanita longi, kanita solo longonyo. E ida seredia.
We have been listening to Colonel Mido and the song Long Onyo. Just in case you are wondering, what does Long Onyo mean? Long Onyo is someone who counts his or her money in the restroom. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of your producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Tian Wang, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.